Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Tony Bullock, and we will be getting started. And I'm glad to see that some will be joining in with us. Me and my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed, will be talking to you today about CRT and woke. As you know, CRT and the phrase woke are being attacked nationwide, mostly by conservatives, but one of the things going on right now, especially in the state of Florida, you have Governor Ron DeSantis, who has basically attacked CRT and recently written a letter to their college boards saying that a class that was going but for history period. And as you all know, without our history, we have no American history. Now, let me be honest. I had some setbacks this afternoon getting this pulled together, but apparently these are the things that happen. So I have someone call.
Can you hear me?
Caller, can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello? I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. And there, ladies and gentlemen, I do have my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. And trust and believe, I am glad to hear her voice, because this has been, we're gonna give it a shot, because trust me, I went in and scheduled everything, then all of a sudden, it was not there, so I had to go in and come in a back way. But you know what they say, we make a way out of no way.
This is true. This is absolutely true.
So, my sister, I really appreciate you sitting in with me this evening and helping me get this off the ground. Really appreciate that in you.
No worries. No worries. Glad to be here.
And I'm telling you, give us a little heads up, little disclaimer about Sister Eileen Reed and some of her background, if you don't mind.
Okay, well, my name is Eileen Reed. I was born in Fresno, raised in Fresno and in San Francisco. And I would say that I got my liberal worldview, progressive worldview, Pan-African worldview, based on my family members who were both Nation of Islam followers as well as Black Panthers. Like a lot of people of my generation, I'm in my middle 60s. You know, we had parents who were liberal in their political views, but in their other views, they were kind of conservative, you know, church going, that sort of thing, which is always a good thing. Graduate from Fresno State, BA in English, minor in political science, And currently, I am one of the people who coordinate the Progressive Black Summit here in Fresno, and I am currently the president of Fresno Freedom School. So I have Yes, I have a vested interest in our black children. Yes. So that's my story in a nutshell, y'all.
And your work with the Progressive Black Summit has really taken off. And
Yes, it has. We've been lucky. We've had supporters like yourself who have attended and been there to show support. Based on the work with Freedom School in Southwest Fresno, we are focusing on food insecurity for the moment with the summit. And we have had some really, really good speakers. We've had nutritionists. We've had people who are black farmers. We had a panel last year. So it's been really an eye-opening, a third eye-opening experience.
Indeed it has, and I thank you for allowing me to help and assist you with this movement. Being progressive here in Fresno sometimes can make you feel like you're out there alone, but right now, the way things are going, we have to stay on that battlefield and fight.
Yes,
because
we do.
If we don't, that next generation is in real trouble. And I know that some may not understand it, but, you know, we have got to stop being lackadaisical when it comes to our political power and the power of our own people. You know, we got to stop, you know, like Fannie Lou Hamer say, you get tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm. You haven't said nothing but a word. And it's
at some
point,
you have to stand up and fight back.
Exactly. And, you know, and there's different ways. I mean, people need to choose and decide on the way that they're going to make that fight. And it's interesting, Brother Tony, because you and I talk about this all the time, that, you know, being conscious, being woke, being political minded, and why voting is important, why having a voice is important. So many times people spend 75% to 90% of their time just existing. But the thing is that if we don't stay on our toes like you're talking about, our children are going to have to refight the fights that our grandparents fought, and we don't want that.
That is absolutely true. That old adage that they used to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that really seems to be what's going on here in America. And the more you look around, and just in your daily news, things that we fought about and talked about back in the early 60s and 70s are coming back to bear.
Exactly. We're in a state of chaos, for lack of a better word, political chaos. I'm not saying people are you know, burning buildings and out in the street, but it might come to that. And I think that January 6th rebellion that happened, riot that happened, uprising that happened in Washington, D.C., that should have been a wake-up call for black people and other people of color about what's going on in this country. And we can't blame everything just on Trump, but best believe that the far right is taking a trip and a journey to erode the rights that so many of us have fought and died for. So we're at a crucial crossroads right now to stay on point. So I'm so glad you're having this show about wokeness.
And with you starting with that, you know what? Let's start with wokeness, because we're gonna do CRT and we're gonna do wokeness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I understand, the word woke was derived from that good old African-American vernacular to alert to racial prejudice and or discrimination.
That's right.
But as
That's
you
right.
know, as we have moved into these latter years, now here in from 2010 on, it has taken a broader awareness of social significance where it has taken in sexism and racism and white privilege and social
mm-hmm.
justice is what we use the ballot, but there's a brand new spin on it out there now.
That's right.
Now, that particular
That's right.
phrase been around in the black community since the 1930s, you know, and I remember in 2014, BLM was started using it after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson.
Wow. Wow.
And then, you know, after that, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I want you to finish your point.
Oh, and you know, and the thing about after that Ferguson shooting, all of a sudden white America heard this phrase, and the next thing you know, being woke got turned into this great big meme on the internet. And you start seeing it everywhere like fire. They had just took it and ran with it. And then when they got accused of cultural appropriation, they wanted to get upset. Well, we're just trying to show support. They went out and made t-shirts, hats, and everything else they could think of and start selling it on the internet.
Right. That yeah, fake wokeness. It got hijacked.
Yeah.
As so many of our phrases and idioms do. But no, you're right. And it's unfortunate that it even has to take the death of somebody like Mike Brown, who, I mean, that whole thing that happened to that brother with him laying out in the street for hours and covering him. I mean, you know, and the thing is, Brother Tony, is that we are still having these conversations about black men and black women still being shot dead in the street, being accosted. And I say this to all of my white liberal friends and acquaintances. I say this, if you really want to be woke, then you need to be about trying to dismantle the racist system, the system of privilege that we live in, because that's really what this is about. That's
yes,
what this
indeed.
Is about.
Yes, indeed. You hit the nail right on the head with that one. And listen, if there's anybody out there listening in, you can give us a call. Call in 563-999-3043. We don't mind hearing your point. In fact, we'd like to hear your point. So give us a call if you're watching on, you know, Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or whatever. If you're watching on Facebook as I have it running, go ahead and give us a call at 563-999-3043. But you're right, sister. And, you know, the writer, William Melville Kelly, is given credit with being the first person to commit the term woke to print in his 1962 op-ed that was being used by beatniks. And it was, if you're woke, you dig it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brother Kelly is best known for his debut novel, A Different Drummer, that was published in 1962. But
wow.
He also covered the trial of Norman Butler and Thomas Johnson. These were the men who were accused of assassinating Malcolm X. And he covered that trial for the Saturday Evening Post. And, you know, at that time, that was a big deal.
Yes.
If you know anything about the Saturday Evening Post.
Yes, that was a huge deal because they weren't known for their progressive liberal views. So for them to cover something like that, that was huge.
Yes, it was. Now, he covered that, and he said, you know, the whole time that he was there at trial, he felt like those two men were being railroaded because, like a lot of blacks, he felt like the government had a hand somewhere involved in that. And let's just say the truth and shame the devil. Yeah, a lot of people felt that way. Some may not have said it, but they definitely had that feeling. that the government had something to go on with Brother Malcolm getting assassinated.
Right. Right.
So,
well,
go ahead.
Most of us know that it was supposed to be an inside job because Elijah Muhammad didn't like Brother Malcolm speaking up and going rogue, so to speak, away from, you know, the rank and file. And it would not surprise me or many of us to know that the government had a hand in it, just like many of us believe that the government had a hand in the assassination of Martin Luther King.
Right.
You know, and that's what we're talking about, and we're going to be talking about with CRT. That's what we're talking about, the systematic racism that exists in this country. It's woven into everything that exists structurally in America, our schools, education, housing, all of it. And, you know, this wokeness that this brother's talking about is so important. So I'm sorry to interrupt. So this brother believed that the government had a hand in Malcolm's murder.
Right. And so after that, he decided to move to Paris, and he moved to Paris, and he taught at the university there in Paris, and he taught English studies.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote from there, and I don't think he ever came back to the U.S. Maybe to visit,
mm-hmm.
but to stay, no.
Mm-hmm.
And as
mm-hmm.
you know, back then, a lot of Paris, even when I was in the military, found out there were a lot of expatriates in Paris.
Yes.
Who
yes.
had left the United States and never came back.
Right. Right. They found it easier living in Europe as opposed to, or in France, I should say, per se,
exactly.
because there are probably some parts of Europe that wouldn't welcome them either.
Yeah.
Wow.
Paris, and, you know, at that time, France was really, really nice for Black Americans. And
mm-hmm.
Josephine Baker proved that. You know,
yes.
she went over there and became a national hero.
Yeah, she did. Well, she earned that because she did a lot of work with the resistance and, you know, a lot of undercover work, counterintelligence and all that good stuff. So the sister was more than just an entertainer.
Yes,
people
she was.
Who don't know that about Josephine should know it. They should know it, excuse me. So this term woke has been around for a while then, brother.
Yes, it has. It has. And, you know, as you are beginning to notice, you know, conservatives here in the United States and around the world have now taken that phrase and muddied it,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to
absolutely
make it obscure. Excuse
yeah.
me.
Absolutely. Well, like most things that originated with Black folks, you know, they're trying to hijack it. And the far right is a lot more dangerous than people want to believe. The struggles that's going on in the House of Representatives right now should tell us that. So we need to, and this is one of the reasons why I'm glad you're doing this show, so that we can reclaim what woke is supposed to be about.
Exactly.
To reclaim
exactly.
it.
Because as you know, conservatives, they take a term like woke and they do what they call systematic bleaching. You know, they strip away the denotative content of the word so they can attach it to anything to do with race or progressivism and take it and say, look, that's what that is. You know,
exactly.
right now they're stomping on women's rights. But, of course, that's yep. being woke when you speak out about it.
Exactly.
You know,
that's,
talking
that's
about
exactly.
attacks on, you know, transgender people. But if you say anything, mm-hmm. you're woke.
Yeah, as if that were a bad thing. And that's the thing. We need, so many people across the board need to be woke so that they could understand what real struggle is. You know, there are a lot of Black people, and I could be addressing, you know, Black conservatives, you know, like Clarence Thomas and folks like
right,
that.
Right.
But yeah. But the thing is that, you know, they think that they're in a protective class of people, and they're really not. And it's no surprise somebody like Trump was elected. If people had been more woke, he would have never gotten office in the first place. So
no,
what does that tell us about America?
You know, and you just brought up a good point, something that I think about often. You know, now we talk about politicians, but think about it. You know, Joe and Sally next door, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that you may see every day and wave at you, but how are they thinking, okay? Are they about the status quo? Are they about putting people in a certain place and time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they not about everybody being on the same level? And like you said, if people were mobile, Trump wouldn't that have gotten, and I hate to use his name, I always call him 45, but, you know, he wouldn't that have gotten elected. So that makes you wonder, okay, you have a lot of people who say they're not about this, but yet,
right,
when you close that door in the voting booth,
mm-hmm.
what are they actually doing? And you find that white women in America, they voted for Republicans and Trump like they was crazy.
This is true. This is very, very true. And now those very same women might have issues where their reproductive rights are being challenged. Maybe that's not a problem for them, but maybe
right.
it'll be a problem for their daughters or their granddaughters. And then what?
Exactly.
So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So once again, people, if you're out there listening and you want to call in, give us a call at 563-999-3043. We are waiting to take your call.
Yes.
You're right. And the funny thing is you have a lot of women who will say, well, my family's always done this, but okay, can't you for yourself?
Right.
Or you have people who will say, well, you know, that's what they do on our side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know mm-hmm. it's not correct, you know you're not standing up for what's right, why follow in behind them?
Exactly. And this is the thing, and I don't know if it is just a pipe dream of mine about people getting registered to vote. I'm talking about black people now, people getting registered to vote and then voting. Because how else are we going to have a bloodless revolution without voting power? I mean, you know, the system is tainted. I'm not going to say that it's not, but we have to get in a position where we can do something to change that. And to me, voting is so important because of that. Because believe me, there are black people who came out in droves voting against 45.
Yeah.
Just voting against him, trying to hold the tide. And, you know, we didn't have enough to do it. And this is why I'm always pushing, you know, register and vote. But I am optimistic enough to believe that a change, it has to. Otherwise, why are we here? And this is, you know, you and I talk all the time, Brother Tony, about why it's important to have these conversations, because
right.
we don't know who's listening. But if anybody is listening, please understand it from our point of view, that some of us, as long as there are breath in our bodies, will never stop fighting for our people. Never.
No, we
Ever.
Will not. We will stand, and we will be in the lead. We are not going to take a back seat.
Absolutely.
We will not do that. Okay.
No.
So let's go to the other side of the coin. let's talk about CRT here in America right now.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I'm here to tell you right now. You would think CRT was the plague that came from hell. The way that certain states, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Virginia, they are going absolutely nuts.
Exactly.
Because they feel like CRT, critical race theory, is telling everyone white people is nothing but evil. Now, I've never heard that said, although I will say this, and may he rest in peace. I had a friend, dad once told me that the white man was the lowest thing God ever wiggled a gut into. Mm. And I just looked at him like, but, and he's saying, the reason right. why I say it is because they treated not only our people bad, but Hispanics, Asians, they yeah. kill their own
Come
for
on.
Insurance. And I was like,
Come
oh,
on.
Man.
Exactly.
You know, and you come to find out that people are people no matter where you go. But the truth exactly. of the matter is with CRT, I'm telling you, this makes absolutely no sense. People fought for rights. We fought mm-hmm. to just be equal.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
now here we are, 2023, and people are saying that African studies in Florida absolutely have no redeeming value.
That's the fear factor. And so my question is, why is it so hard for white people to accept critical race theory? Why do they have such a problem with it? And
you know
I have a lot of theories about it, but
That's the whole thing, you know. That, for example, Liz, and you can pick it apart. Governor Ron DeSantis, I remember him signing what he called the Stop Woke Act bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which basically said anything to do with CRT or raising up Black America, it's something wrong with that because, you know, there's no way that we've been dirty to them and they're blowing things out of proportion. So the only history we're going to teach is Black history that has been approved and Black history that has been validated and tweaked to meet state guidelines. Now, you know what that means.
Yes.
We're
absolutely sanitize Black history.
Sanitize it, homogenize it. We're going to whitewash it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Over in Arkansas, new governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she has signed a bill against CRT that emphasizes, you know, CRT only came about because they're after people about their skin color and they want to live segregated from us.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same woman who just had a bill signed that the word Latina and Latinx would no longer be used in
exactly.
the state government there.
So, you know, so what we're really talking about is they want to protect white sensibilities and they want to protect they want to hold the line on white privilege. That's what this is talking about. And, you know, after we talked about doing this show, I wanted to do a little research on CRT. So I'm going to go ahead and read you what I've got as a definition of CRT. I've got, it's an academic and a legal framework that denotes that systematic racism is part of American society. From education and housing to employment and healthcare, CRT recognizes that racism is more than the result of individual bias and prejudice. In fact, it is woven into the fabric of America. Now, just think about that. It is woven into the fabric of America. So that means when the police stop a Black person, man or woman, on the street they already have a preconceived notion of what this black person is or what this brown person is and what they're about. We need to be very clear about what equality is in America, and we have to be very clear that it's never been equal. I mean, the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1880 in California said everybody is welcome except the Chinese.
Exactly.
And the Chinese were only welcome, to help build the railroads.
Exactly.
So this is not new. Yeah. Yes, brother, this is not new.
No. And you know, not only that, think about that time frame when they put the Japanese in internment camps.
Absolutely. 1945, that's a long lead.
1945. Yeah. Not only put them in internment camps, but then took their bank accounts, took their property. Yeah. And you know, the thing about that is, good old Fresno Fairgrounds here in the know, that's
mm-hmm.
what that used to be, an internment
that's
camp.
Right. And yeah, so it was an assembly area. It sure was.
I remember when we used to go out there, some of those old barracks were still on that property. Now, I don't know
wow.
if they are now, but on that back area by Butler Avenue, there were several
right.
of those old barracks still standing.
See.
And the thing about that is here in Fresno, in the Central Valley period, from, say, from Modesto to Bakersfield, you had
uh-huh.
a lot of Asians who were farmers, especially
right.
in the Tulare area. And when 1945 rolled around and we went to war with Japan and Germany and whatnot during the World War, they
uh-huh.
went through there, rounded those folks up, took their property, took their bank account. A lot of white men got rich during that time frame.
And this, we're
same
talking
thing
about
happened to black farmers. Yeah, same thing happened to black farmers.
Absolutely.
What's our little spot mm-hmm. down there where we had a national park now? Name for the brother?
Allensworth.
Allensworth is another one that's a good example. That brother came down there, had a thriving community. Santa Fe moved the railroad because the train actually used to stop in Allensworth.
Yes.
People went there, shopped everything. What they do? They moved on up the road towards
that's right.
to
that's
keep
right.
Allensworth from thriving and getting business.
That's right. Come on now.
And then all the city services stopped going to Allensworth.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know.
And then,
but you're right.
And people, so we're talking about a system of denial and racism and pushback that has gone on for centuries. I mean, just think about the indigenous people and them being pushed off their own land, this whole notion of doctrine of discovery, like this country didn't exist until European colonials arrived here. I mean, come on now.
Exactly.
There were people
exactly.
living here. Yes. Yes, and
now,
their land was taken. So this is not a new thing.
No, it's not. Now, I heard you say that there was a legal attachment with CRT, and legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw is the person who was credited with coining the phrase CRT. And that
mm-hmm.
was in response to then-President 45 issuing an executive order in December of 2020, excluding federal contracts from diversity and inclusion training interpreted as divisive
mm.
concept, race, social
mm.
stereotyping, social scapegoating. But according to Crenshaw, CRT isn't a noun but a verb and cannot be confined to one static and narrow division, but it is evolving in a malleable practice.
That's
it
right.
critiques how the social construction of race and institutionalized racism perpetrates a race case caste mm-hmm. system that relegates people of color to the bottom tiers.
Right. That's right.
And if you think about it, there's a lot of truth to that statement.
It's true. Yes, on the bottom tier, because, I mean, and this all ties into the way this country is run with capitalism and all that, because you cannot have rich people without having poor people. So who's going to be on the bottom rung to be the poor people?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something I read in the evangelical, in something that was called Genesis.org.
Mm.
Someone by the name of Neil Shinivi defined CRT as ideologically that divides the world into oppressed groups with oppressors' aims to liberate the oppressed. This is also known as cultural Marxism because there is a drive to attempt to right the wrongs done by the previous generation by redistributing the wealth to blacks and other minorities who may have suffered through systematic racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Now, see, this is the argument that a lot of folks will make. A lot of Caucasian folks, European, American folks will make, well, I never owned any slaves. My family never owned any slaves. But
yes,
the thing is that privilege continues, and so you continue to benefit from white privilege just by your mere existence.
Exactly.
And they do not want to accept that.
Not only do they not want to accept it, they don't want to admit it.
There are some who do, but many do not. The naysayers do not.
They do not want to admit it.
Exactly.
I didn't gain anything from white privilege. Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
The fact that you can go through your K-12 education and then just walk into the university of your choice where I have to submit paperwork, I have to pass a certain test, I got to get a certain range on that test in order for me to be considered a student.
Exactly. And let's not talk about the whole legacy part of of that system, that educational welfare system known as legacy, where hey, my family's been going here for, generations, and so I deserve to go here as well.
Exactly. And it's funny you brought that up because I think back to when my wife and I were in Texas, at Texas State. Texas State is the college that one of our presidents, Lyndon Baines Johnson, went to in Central Texas, there in San Marcos, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
San Marcos, Texas, Texas State, the good old Bobcats, had more legacies than the law allowed.
See?
And many of those families went back to the 30s and the 20s.
Oh, my goodness.
You had folks there whose family had oil money and cattle money and natural gas money.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there just because Daddy wrote a big check. Mama wrote a big check.
Exactly.
Somebody donated to the athletic program so Junior could get on the team.
Exactly.
Legacy.
And a legacy. Legacy. And, I want to take a minute and talk about the things that make up, the tenets that make up CRT, and maybe you can help me with like one of the last ones, Brother Tony, because I'm not sure that I have it correctly. But from what I've read, one of the tenets is that the notion that racism is ordinary and not an aberration. So what is that? That's a powerful. Racism is ordinary and not an aberration. This is not something that just happens every once in a while. This is something that happens all the time. Okay, so that's one. The second one is the idea of an interest convergence. So all these folks who happen to be Caucasian are have an interest in things staying the way that they are. And this is what we're talking about. The same with, you know, like the legacy. They have an interest in things remaining the way that they are. The third thing is the social construction of race, because this is how this whole thing started, that people were, like you said, somebody decided who was inferior and who was superior. So that's,
right.
So that's part of it, yes. And then there's the idea of storytelling and counter-storytelling. So what is it that many of us say that the victor in a war writes the history? Nobody's listening to the side that lost, really. And so that's an important part. And then I think I'm not sure about this last tenet that has to deal with whites accepting or not accepting what's going on in CRT. So I'm not sure about that fifth tenet. I got cut off in my computer search, so I'm not sure about that.
And, you know, that thing right there, it's just like everything else. You have some that will accept the things that are said about CRT, and then you have some, like in states like Texas and Tennessee and Arkansas and Oklahoma, who fight it tooth and nail. There's
right.
no way that could have possibly happened. I know there were some things that were done that weren't right, but surely it wasn't that bad.
Right.
And nothing gets me more than hearing people talk about the early 50s and 60s during the civil rights marches, when there were marches and freedom rides and whatnot. And I always love when people start with, well, you know, they brought some of that on themselves. Excuse me?
Exactly.
Asking to be treated fairly
like
and equally is asking for violence.
Exactly. And that is what having racial blinders on, you know, because a lot of, you know, white folks, oh, well, I employ so-and-so and so-and-so, and they never say anything. Well, they didn't say anything because they wanted to keep their jobs, you know. They didn't say anything because of a lot of reasons. But no, you're absolutely right. In the 40s and 50s and 60s, black people have come a long way, and we still have a long way to go, because this is 2023. How many firsts are we still hearing about in our
exactly.
country?
Exactly. I was just about to bring that up.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. We are still talking about first, and that is absolutely crazy. The first this, the first that. Really?
Really. And it's frightening, because, you know, I tell people, think about the school to prison system that has caught up so many of our children and taken so many of our people away from their community. I mean, black people make up about 13% of the U.S. population. But when you look at prison population, we make up, what, about 40%, 35%, 40%?
I say we make up about 65 to 70%.
Probably. I was trying to be conservative in that number and not go over the top, but you're probably right, Brother Tony.
I know.
You're probably right. And why is that?
The part about it is, you know, because, like you said, from the school to prison system, it starts with sending kids to those special education classes.
Come on.
Child a problem. That they don't want to learn. No, you don't want to take the time and teach them.
Exactly.
So what do they do?
And our children are very smart. They understand when somebody doesn't want to teach them, doesn't want
exactly.
to be bothered with them. They get that vibe. They know.
They surely do. Think about it. You know, they say things like, for example, like Governor DeSantis down there in Florida. Well, there's no redeeming quality. No, there's no redeeming quality for you. HBCUs across that southern tier, FAMU being one of them, have given us some of the most excellent people you want to see working in government, working in your state, and working around the nation.
Exactly.
They get a for real education.
Exactly. And we had HBCUs. Why? Because many universities would not allow black students to attend their schools. And so we build our own, and they are examples of what black excellence is about.
Now, so, have you noticed, because I have, this past football season, I'm watching, you know, I love my football games, and I'm watching HBCU games, and I'm watching Jackson State and Alabama A&M and all these cats, FAMU, TSU, PV, and I'm looking, and it's like, wait a minute, where all these white boys come from? Because now white boys ain't got hip.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't go to Texas and be the starting receiver, you know, Texas Southern looking pretty good. So instead of going to Texas A&M or going to Texas Tech, let me go on over to Texas Southern. They get on the team. A lot of them go, and they become the field goal kicker or the punter or a linebacker. Okay? So they didn't get hip. Got a couple of white Beckys out there who are on in drum squads on the major red team now.
Who would have thought?
Well, you see, they done figured it out.
Wow.
If I can't do it over there, hey, let me go over here and see this way. I'll get some street cred. See, I know how this works out for them.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I wish I could say I'm surprised by that, but I'm really not, because. Well, I'm not going to say that, but what I will say is this, is that they find a way to get over. They find a way to make it work for them on an individual basis. And it's for them, those individuals who got into those black schools, it's not just about raising up their people. We're talking about individual people who want to get ahead. And so
they come at it a whole different way.
That's right.
To holler CRT. For example, Texas Governor Greg Hot Wheels Abbott. Now, he jumped on the train early with CRT. He wrote his bill back in 2021 forbidding teachers from teaching or even talking about current events of American history or anything he thought that was had racism attached to it in the K-12 public schools. He passed that bill in 2021. He started early.
Yes, he did. He wanted to make sure that nobody's going to be looking at the soiled hands of racists in that state. And really, that's what it's about, Brother Tony. I mean, if people would just tell the truth about history, if they would just tell the truth about what happened, if you just said the facts and said it consistently, we wouldn't even need to call it CRT. We would just call it American history. But, see, people would be looking and feeling guilty. Their sensibilities would be offended. And that is why they don't want it taught.
And that therein lies the problem. You know, here we have Greg Abbott, who has been doing what? Instead of fixing his electrical grid in Texas, he's been taking that money, shipping migrants out of the country. Sending them to D.C., sending them to Martha's Vineyard, sending them to the, you know, just wherever, Philadelphia.
And if that is not racist, people, if he was going to do something, he should have invested in building some living quarters, some housing for these folks until
not
their status gets worked out.
They
creating jobs.
Do that in Texas.
Oh, I know that. I
not
know,
at
and it is laughable, but I'm just saying you can't say that that's not racist what he's doing by shipping them all these other locations.
That's very racist.
Exactly.
And the group that he just sent off in the dead of winter in D.C. and sent them outside of the vice president's home.
Right.
With nowhere
right.
to go.
Nowhere
no
to
connection.
Go.
Just the bus dropping them off and peeling out. Boom.
That's a
so
shame.
So now he took these people, shipped them off. Now they got to try to fend for themselves. Fortunately, there were people there who got contacted to a shelter that took all these people in, get them situated,
right.
brought in
right.
some representatives from the government to start trying to get some mm-hmm. things taken care of. But yet
mm-hmm.
these are the very same people who want to holler that you are trying to make white America look bad. But y'all keep doing stupid stuff.
Exactly. And people who know you and I know that we're not painting everybody with the same white paint, with the same brush.
No, I'm not painting anybody with the same paintbrush.
No, we're not. We're just saying that these things happen, and these things, and we're talking about an elected official.
Right.
Exactly. That should not
very
be happening.
So. Girl,
that should not be happening.
I think back, and I'm telling you, it stays with me. I still think back to when Keith Chung, a member of the school board here, made that statement about us over at Edison. They live in a gilded cage. Like we were something different. Like we weren't like the rest of the students here in the city.
Exactly.
And
you know,
back then, it truly was us against them.
Well, yeah. Yes. And what happened to Edison when it looked like forced busing was going to do the whole integration thing? Edison got turned into a magnet school. It got turned into Computech. And so that was a way to separate the races in a very real way. And that, I'm not going to say it exists to this day, but if we looked at what Edison is now, student body, versus what Computech is now, student body, we might see that there are more white people, more white children going to Computech than just regular Edison. But
exactly. And that's what it always was.
These are the things that we have to deal with and what Reverend Harris calls Mississippi Fresno.
Yeah.
These things are real. We're not making this up. This is not some science fiction thriller. These are things that we have lived and experienced. And so
I can remember when they first start taking kids to Computech, my brother was supposed to go to Computech. And somehow he ended up on a list. And had to go that first year, he had to go to junior high across town. He couldn't go to junior high in his own neighborhood.
Isn't that something?
They brought all those white children over there.
Exactly. And so this is one of the reasons why people need to continue to push for CRT and understand why it's important. Because everybody...
Yeah.
And this includes black people who say, well, you know, no, yeah, you need to check it out. You live your life in this country. Yeah, exactly.
We had our share of black folks who have stood up and said, well, you know, CRT is going to be nothing but problems for our people. They already don't like us, so if we try to, you know, expand our voice, we're just asking for more problems. Really?
Like we don't already have problems. Well,
yeah,
you know
we
what?
Have problems already.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, when I was doing a little bit of reading for this show, it made me think of a book that I read several years ago by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing called The ISIS Papers. And Sister Welsing, who was a trained psychiatrist, wrote this about, you know, the roots and origins of white supremacy culture. And I'm right. like, you know what, I would recommend this book to everybody, because if you read it, you'll understand why our white brothers and sisters are fighting so hard against CRT being taught, because they think it's going to be a problem. And people like Armstrong Williams and Clarence Thomas and all those other black conservatives who think that everything is fine, they're in for a rude awakening. Because we're at a tipping point in this country. Yes, we're at a tipping point in this country. Just look at the conservative stacked Supreme Court. Look at our federal courts that are stacked with 45, appointees. And think about it. It used to be historically that the federal government was the place that black and people of color could go for some relief. Some legal relief, but that is no
right.
longer the case.
That is no longer
now
the case because
no longer the case.
The courts have been salted down with conservatives and people who are going to do their dirty work from the local to the state to the federal levels. Well, my sister,
right.
we're just about at the end of our hour, and you know what? Even though we got no callers, I appreciate you sitting in with me, and we put the information out there in the cosmos, so... I know that people will be able to listen to this at their own leisure and check it out when they feel like they want to. But, again, I really appreciate you sitting in with me. I thank you very much for that. And
I had a good time. Thank you for asking me.
Not a problem. Give me your closing words.
Well, I always say to everybody, stay black till we get back.
Yes, she does, and trust and believe. That old school Panther sister means exactly that. And, you
yes,
know, we're going to always be that. And for those of you who know me and know that I've been around for a while, I'm going to say what I always say. Each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you who are proficient with your weapon, take your people to the range. Get them trained up. Get them certified. Start a neighborhood watch. Start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching. Everybody stay strong. Take care of one another. Make sure you take care of your young folks, because we are in a battle. You realize it or not. Again, Sister Reed, I appreciate you very much. We're going to call it a night, people.
All right.
Thank y'all for listening in on Facebook. Once again, it has been West Side Visions, and trust and believe, I will get back at you. I'll holler.